This is Pure Decking number 27 for Tuesday, July the 5th, 1953. So, man, I hope no historians ever actually listen to this show and think our dates are accurate, because we're going to so screw up their timeline. Anyway, so go ahead, Basie.
Isn't that the purpose?
Yes, that is in fact the purpose. That joke, I think I've told the story on that joke before, but I guess I'll do the intros first. So tonight I've got with me Heavy Metal, BSV, and the Knox, and of course I am Morps. And the story behind giving a false year is a funny one. Years ago I used to work as a cashier for a grocery store, and that was a joke I thought was really funny, because you'd have... people would be lined up one right after another, and every single one of them would ask you what the date was when they go to write out their check. Because apparently, if you still write checks as opposed to using a credit card, you have difficulty keeping track of the individual days. So I always thought this was kind of funny, so I would give them the correct day, correct month, and then some wacky, stupid year, figuring they'd catch that and write the correct year on the check. And I had somebody give me a check for, like, that was post-dated by, like, 50 years or something retarded like that. It was, like, 2057 or something like that. And they wrote it. Just weren't thinking. Wrote down the date I told them. So that's where the joke of giving the wrong year every time we open the show comes from. I just find it amusing. We're doing a little bit different setup tonight. I've been working with stuff for the radio station, trying to improve our audio, trying to make it easier for people to get involved in some of our shows. And so we've actually moved to recording the show in Second Life, which has always been a bit of a technical endeavor. So, Heavy, how's your backup recorder going, or did you even kick it on?
It's going pretty good. Actually, it's been running the whole time, and I've gotten everything for the last... hour and a half. So
great. So you you got an hour and a half of sound checks and me going, huh? Why isn't that working? Huh? That's strange.
Yes, but it also means it hasn't crashed yet.
Well, that's true, and that's handy. And I'm actually trying to use it's one of the Second Life viewers you would use if you're writing a bot, is what I'm trying to use to record off of, and it's kind of working. It's got a strange audio issue where it's
I don't think
capping
bots
out.
Normally need the voice support.
The text client I found had it, so it was like, okay, that's what I need, perfect. Because the broadcast box is this ancient Pentium M, and whereas it does great for the broadcast and the stream and letting you guys remote into it, I don't think it could handle a full Second Life viewer and the stream. I think it would just run out of horsepower and kind of die. So, So it's been interesting. I've discovered that I will put together these insane, crazy solutions to a problem, and then as soon as I get those working, realize a way to do it that's like five times simpler. So I'm still experimenting with it, though. I may go to a different way of doing this if we can't get the audio settings on this this text client a little cleaner. So, or just go back to Skype, which is something I'm. I don't know that it's that good of a jump going from Skype to Second Life, because we're worried about stability issues and advertising. I think there's something wrong with the logic there. So, quiet crowd tonight. I'm cracking stupid jokes left and right, and nobody's calling me on it. That's just,
I'm munching on pizza.
It's harder for us to groan out loud when we're on Push to Talk here.
I just leave my microphone open. I mean, that's how I do the show when I'm on Skype, so that's how I'm doing it in Second Life. So, whatever. So, anyways, though. What'd you say, Knox?
All right, it's the plan then.
That's plan. Just leave the mic open. We'll talk over each other. Just like on Skype. So. Anyways, get into our current events section here as I title it in my little notes. First story up is actually a New York Times story. Ugh. Pilots have gotten approval to use iPads instead of paper manuals and logs from the FAA. So, I think it's kind of cool. I mean, do you care that your pilot's using an iPad?
If doctors can do it, I guess pilots can.
Well, go ahead, Vasi.
Just as long as they don't tell us we can't use ours on the plane as well.
Yeah, I know, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, yeah, you have to turn your iPad off, we're landing. It's like, well, what's the pilot looking at? An iPad? Well, he's closer to the equipment than I am. What the hell?
It's really only old cell phones and other such device that use brute force power to broadcast that really do that. Right now, there's really no reason for them to just not put a Wi-Fi spot on the planes themselves.
I guess it's just them trying to remind you who's in charge when you get on their airplane. But actually, in the article itself, it lists the couple of airlines that have gotten approval to do this. Apparently, each individual airline has to get each individual device, which is why they keep talking about iPads, because they're common enough that, and they've been out long enough that they can actually get the damn things approved. Because my first thought was, why not grab some of the Android ones that you can really customize and, you know, have some more control over than the iPad stuff.
Customize on an airplane? Dude, you know why that control panel is so crowded? It's all full of legacy devices so that people who haven't flown a plane in 40 years can still do it.
I was not aware of that. But, I mean, you at least put their logo or something on it, right? But, no, the article's, it's a bit of a read for what it's really saying, which is that instead of having to carry on all those technical manuals and event logs, they're finally letting them use something other than paper, and which surprises me because I kind of figured they would have had laptops in the cabins a while back for tracking that kind of stuff, but apparently not. So, but yeah, they have to get each individual airline has to get each individual tablet computer approved by the FAA to use them, which I think that's a little retarded. If you can approve it for one airline, why not, you know, everybody? But even in the article, they were saying that the two different airlines that have gotten it approved had different rules as to whether or not you had to turn them on or off during takeoff, and apparently the pilots had to turn them off too, which it's like, that's great, that's where the technical information is, and you can't turn it on because the stewardess is up there badgering you about it.
All right, checklist. All electronic devices off. Check. Now what?
Not only that, but they're not being piped into the black box, so you don't know or have that information. Granted, you don't have the paper information either, usually after a crash, but it would be nice if they did integrate that into the plane. Then it's just a matter of time. You know that's going to happen. They'll come up with the Boeing or Airbus will come up with their version of it and then just have it integrated in. So then you can have a black box data recorder.
Well, again, that goes back to why not do the Android ones. I can't imagine that it would be easier to develop the black box integration on an iPad thing. I mean, that's so locked down. And I would imagine each...
You could probably more likely get a military-grade case, which would probably be stronger than the black box itself.
Well, I don't know. And, of course, then there's always the classic joke of, well, if the black box is indestructible, why don't they just make the whole plane out of it? But, there's all kinds of...
pails would probably not fit many people.
Yeah, I know, but it's still a fun joke. It's just, I don't know, I've flown recently a couple of times, and, yeah, I'll be honest, I didn't turn my stuff off. I put it in the airplane mode and just killed it so you couldn't tell that the stuff was on, just killed the screen. I didn't turn anything off. They didn't come around and say, excuse me, sir, can you turn that off? You're interfering with the equipment, which is the excuse they always give, right? I can actually kind of understand cell phones not wanting cell phones on because you're moving so fast in a plane, you'd be tower hopping so quick you could I could see that causing some sync issues knowing the way some cell phone equipment works. And
do you
from
guys
personal
know the reason why they don't have or don't want cell phone broadcasting? Because I do know the technical reason for it. The GSM frequencies interfere with the preamp on the speakers for the radio system. So essentially that sound you get...
All the noise? That's it? Oh, that's funny. Yeah,
that's probably
it actually
well
only the GSM frequencies. CDMA doesn't have that problem, and none of the more advanced technologies have that problem.
Well, not only that, if your equipment's properly shielded, you don't have that problem. What that means is that they have crappy shielding on their wiring in the plane. But
just on the preamp of the speaker, though, that's the problem.
And, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, you get it in your headphones and.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen a black box, actually. It's just an ammo can with a tape recorder in it.
I'd believe that. I believe the GSM speaker thing, though. I could see that actually interfering with some stuff, at least with the radios. But, there's another good reason to turn off your cell phone's radio when you're in the plane is because all that tower hopping will run your battery down. So that's actually a pretty good reason to kick on at least airplane mode. But I don't turn my stuff off, even though they're like, oh, you got to turn it off. It's like, no, actually, you don't. Because
I take off.
And landing. And it's really
more
annoying when you're right.
So that the hostesses don't have to yell over you.
Well, that could be the case. I could see a safety issue too if the plane crashes and people don't notice because they're too busy on their laptops. But
well, once you're in flight, they'll allow those.
Oh no, I know. I mean, I've flown enough times. It's really annoying when you're right in the middle of writing a piece of code and the stewardess comes around. Sir, you have to turn that off. It's like, no, I'm in the zone. Shut up. Anybody who codes knows what I'm talking about.
Affected not enough by the computer to not notice the plane shaking apart and. Pulling towards the ground.
I've seen people ignore tornadoes because they're playing Xbox, so I'm not going to actually throw that out there. But
I'd have to say I don't feel any pity for these people.
Hey, the stewardess would love that. If you're that in the zone, you're not panicking and shoving the other people out of the way.
That's true. What's the George Carlin line? You don't have to know where the exit is. You got to know your route and know who you have to kill to get there or whatever. I don't remember the joke now. Go over, whatever it was. But moving on, got a little bit more of a tragic one here. Now, I've linked to I've read a couple of articles on this. The one in the show notes is to a Reuters article, which is really, really going after this newspaper. In Britain, I should have put the name of the newspaper in the notes, and I don't want to open the link right now. So so some reporters from a newspaper that's being acquired by News Corp. A couple of years back, hacked a schoolgirl's voicemail when she went missing and she was murdered. The girl went missing and was murdered, but they didn't know that. And reporters trying, because you know how it is, you have the little girl go missing and everybody goes nuts for the story for a while because it happens often enough, which is kind of creepy that's a stereotype. But the reporters actually hacked into the girl's voicemail on her cell phone. And, we're using that to get the inside scoop on the story, right? And whereas that's kind of sick and weird, voicemail is not exactly hard to hack. There's some really, especially for the time frame they're talking about, if you spoof the phone number that the voicemail box is for, a lot of times it won't prompt you for the password because it'll think you're calling from that cell phone. And most people's voicemail passwords are pretty dumb, 1111, 1234.
Oh, yeah. Mine wouldn't let me. Mine wouldn't allow me to use those passwords, so I had to go with one. Even I wouldn't remember.
They're for the time, and nowadays, they're better about it. But at the time, voicemail hacking was retardedly easy. But here's the part that kind of makes it sick and weird. They listened to messages, so messages got marked as listened to. And because people were still trying to call this girl and trying to find her, it's the voicemail is filling up. So the reporters kindly, this is all alleged, I should say. We don't, the article, it really, really implies and says, oh yeah, we're pretty sure it was them, but it's still accusatory. It's all alleged. Nothing's proven in court yet. So, but, apparently they were deleting voicemails, old ones, to make rooms for the new ones. Which, that's not smart.
They're going beyond the invasion of privacy there. They're messing with the data.
Not only are the evidence.
That's big one right there, Heavy. They're messing with the evidence. Not only that, the family thought the girl was still alive because there was activity on her voicemail, so they thought you know, maybe she had her phone and was out trying to get to somebody and was deleting messages and listening to her voicemail and just couldn't call him back for some reason. So, yeah, that's pretty sick and weird. I mean, it's one thing to get into a system, you know, especially if you're looking for data. It's another thing to start, you know, when this kind of a police investigation, you know, to start tampering with the evidence and, worse, giving the family false hope. That's pretty sick and weird. You know, what, yeah, I don't...
I was going to say, that comes to the legacy system, of the phone, and basically we can fix that now. It's... We're on the cusp, but I think we're about 3 years away from getting rid of the CDMA GSM legacy technology and phasing it out, or at least making it less.
Good luck with that, Heavy. That's going to be a long time. There's still a lot of GSM phones floating around there, feature phones and stuff like that. There's a lot of people out there who are like, I'm not paying $200 for a new phone. I mean, I know there's plenty of ones that do the 3G, but I'm just saying most people, you know, I've known people who've had phone for years and they're not buying a new one because theirs works and they don't want to spend the money.
Grandma?
Yeah.
Grandma? Why are you talking into that plastic brick?
I was just thinking when they go to, full IP communications, you know, and they just do voice over IP, that's when the change is going to happen. And I think once they get the 4G, quote, 4G networks rolled up,
I think that's
stable,
quite a ways off.
They may do that. You're right. That's why I said 3-4 years. That'd probably be that
time. I think it's going to be more than 3-4 years if you look at our history of our, you know, they're just now getting 3G to a lot of places. I mean, come on.
So you're saying
Heavy.
In Europe for sure, Asia for sure, but not in the U.S.
Yeah, that's probably actually a pretty good model. But just to round out what we're talking about here, according to the story I read, apparently this newspaper fired they had somebody publicly apologize, and then they left the organization, so they were fired. And now the media's and the lawyers are going for the editor, and I don't blame them, but at the same time, there's a lot of hoopla because it's a chance to nail News Corp on something. And a lot of people don't like News Corp because, you know, it's Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, so they, you know, any chance to go after them. So that's part of that, too, and that's even worse because now you've got this horrible thing that's happened, and they're using it for political leverage, which I don't even want to get into politics on this show, as we all know. So that's just...
Yeah, and that's the bias, and that's like, oh, let's, you know, crucify them. When you look at, you know, how many other organizations have done this, and it, like I said, it's endemic of bad reporting in general.
Well, I mean, and you make a good point there. How often does this happen, especially stuff like voicemail, which for a long time was retardedly stupid to hack into, you know, spoof the phone number and you're in, right? And, you know, so how often has this kind of shit been happening? It's like all the stuff with LulzSec, right? They've been doing all, you know, they did all the SQL dumps and data dumps and, you know, making a big deal out of it. You think the stuff wasn't going on just because the people doing the hacks weren't publishing password lists? They just made it public.
I was going to say, exactly. And this is a malicious example. You know, all this started out with guys like sitting there going, figuring out, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if I could do this, this, and this to get my voicemail to work better? Because it used to be fucking insane to set up a voicemail and have it do its job right. They on purpose made the prompts last like 2 minutes just so they could burn your minutes up when you went and listened to your voicemail.
Well, there's that.
All of that stuff. And so that's where the hacking started. I just kind of like to get into a little bit of the history and walk people through just a tiny bit of it. And so, of course, now, you know, people want to have a different voicemail service. So now you're playing around with and hacking Sprint and Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, the four big carriers in the U.S. because you, not because you're malicious, but because you want to get away from their usuristic practices. Hence, the technology comes out in a positive way because a lot of people used to do that, myself included, and then now into malicious and dangerous territory because, well,
I think we're talking about I think we're talking about two different kinds of voicemail hacking there, Heavy. There was some of that for good. I'm purely referring to methods of getting into other people's voicemail.
Well, I understand that, but you know, that kind of playing around leads to it or led to the processes that used to get into other people's voicemail.
Actually, I think it's the other way around. The first thing I ever saw in getting into people's voicemail, they were using an early Asterisk build and were getting into people's voicemail, leaving funny messages, figuring out stupid spoofs of double ringing the phone, and then immediately hanging up the first call so you get kicked straight to voicemail so you can mess with their voicemail, leave stupid messages, shit like that. So, I mean, there's... granted, now I kind of went sideways into it whenever I started coming across voicemail hacking. It was because I was looking at early VoIP stuff, Asterisk and that kind of stuff. So, but I think
so to get back to the root of the story is when you look at this kind of stuff, it is way more common, and you need, again, we get back to our mantra, which is know enough to protect yourself. And use real complicated, passwords as long as they allow you to use on your phone system. I think most of them are still 4-number pins, which makes it pretty easy to brute force.
Wow, you just stepped right all over me there. I need to stop being so damn polite to you. I mean, I was literally in mid-sentence, and you just, I was sitting, I lost my thought now, but that's okay.
I didn't hear you, so this comes kind of a delay.
Yeah, that would explain it. Anyways, back to this story. If you are going to hack into people's voicemails, don't do shit like that. Don't delete them. Especially in a case like that where the family thought the girl was still alive because there was activity on her voicemail account. I guess I don't get why they didn't go to the phone company and lock the damn thing down. Probably just didn't think of it at the time because this was several years ago. It's just coming up now because Murdoch's trying to buy it and they're looking for anything to slam it, but it's one of those interesting stories that's cropped up. So anyways, though, we got one more big current event I want to talk about, and that is VSFTP, which is one of the most commonly used FTP servers in Linux and Unix environments, had a backdoor in their code. It's been in there since February, and they caught it late last month. Apparently, their hosting got hacked. Somebody did code injection. And, yeah, there's been a backdoor in VSFTP for the past several months. Apparently, if you used a login name of a smiley, it would try to do a reverse connection back and give you a shell. The article I got linked there
details. You're saying, this backdoor was tagged onto the back of the distribution they were sending out?
It was in the code for the FTP server, yes. This happened also several months back with an IRC chat server, and I am blanking on which one it was. Actually, this was a couple of years back now that I'm thinking about it. But, it's happened to a couple of open source projects where somebody's gotten into their hosting and inserted backdoors in it. Jeez, I can't think of the IRC server that got popped. But VSFTP, that one's always one that's billed as really, really secure, too. So... yeah, that's the sad part is how do you know if this kind of stuff's happened or not? VSFTP happens to be open source, but how do you know it's not happening to the closed source guys too? There are picture frames that have gone out with viruses already loaded up in them, just to name an example. The Energizer USB recharger would load malware on your system because something got into their production system. So, I mean, it's just... WordPress a few weeks ago got popped, and several of the plugins were adding backdoors. So, I don't know. I don't know what you really do about this kind of stuff when your vendor's not checking their own code. Which, I can kind of understand. Why would you? You check it into the server, there it is, you're done. Why would you ever check that what's on the server matches what's on your hard drive at home? I mean, I can... it's really easy to assume it's correct because you're the one doing it, so... But yeah, that's been in there since February. So anybody who's built an FTP server recently, you might want to look at updating your code or swapping to a different FTP server. So. Nobody here cares about FTP servers, apparently. So.
I don't have one.
You don't have one. Well, for sysadmins, it's kind of a big deal, especially because a lot of the, if you ever Google Linux setup an FTP server, VSFTP is the one they almost always tell you to use. So.
Yeah. you know, and again, this is older technology, so we're dealing with people coming in and finding these vulnerabilities.
No, dude, this is modern code. They found this last month, at the end of last month, like a week ago.
Okay.
This is not old.
Well, okay, so how? When did this the base source code get released?
Well, VSFTP's been around forever, but he's been maintaining it. The backdoor went in February. I'd have to pull the article up to give you exact dates.
So you're saying maybe it came in an update or something?
No, they think his hosting got popped.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, then, yeah, there's not much that can be done for that. And again, it seems like he's been pretty on top of it, so that's the best you can do. Back up your data securely, and then don't put anything on the internet you don't want people to get at.
Yeah, I guess it's crazy, though, because it's like, well, you know, shit, what do I do for my software? It's, you know, I don't know what you can do if you can't even trust the software that's coming in, so I don't know, just keep on top of the news, I guess. So, anyways, we're going to go ahead and roll into the music here. I've got two tracks we're going to play. Well, I'm not going to play both, but I mean, they're for the... You all know what I'm trying to say. For the middle music and the closing, they're both going to be off this A Final Date group. Astronauts is the album. So we're going to go into our mid-show break with NASA on the Dance Floor. Okay, there we go. Well, slight technical issue there. Lost a chunk of the recording on the music there. Just the closing of that last track. Let me unmute the other guys. Here we go. You guys still there?
I think so.
Yeah, it stopped recording there for a minute. I'm not sure what I did. I think I hit a button. So I kind of chopped the tail end of the song off there in the break, but that's okay. Just going to make editing this thing a little bit more interesting, as now there's multiple tracks in the recording. Well, anyways, so let me see here. I need to get my... I went nuts messing with that, and I lost my notes. A couple of shows back, we talked about an article or a page that EFF had put up about knowing your rights when it came to police searches of your digital stuff. And it was pretty accurate. It basically came down to, do they have a warrant? And this got brought back to my attention because there was an article on Prison Planet, of all places, that basically referenced it and said, yes, this is a good thing, you should look at it. And it's not so much that the Prison Planet article said anything that we hadn't already said about this EFF page about knowing your rights, but the comments were absolutely hilarious. I mean, just absolutely hilarious, because you know the kind of people who go to Prison Planet, you know, they're absolutely convinced that, and you know, they may not be wrong, that you know our government is total police state and all that other stuff. And anyways, though, so ignoring some of the crazier rhetoric there and trying to stick with, you know, what's real, I'm not saying we're not in a police state, and I'm just not sure that it's the police's fault. Anyways, to make a bad joke there. Is anybody else back besides BSV?
I'm here.
You're here?
Okay. Yeah, ignore the background noise. There's a column of jack-booted, goose-stepping police officers going down the middle of my street there. But ignore that and we'll be fine.
Yeah, well, it's not like you have anything to hide, right, Heavy?
Oh, no, not at all. I broadcast it all over the internet. They know who I am.
To fear.
Nothing to hide, nothing to fear, nothing to see here. Move along. Cows turn themselves. No, wait, no, they don't. Wrong. Wrong joke.
There is something to be said about being a crazy screaming into the internet, because then they're just somebody that they know about and accept and say, there's a crazy over here, and they leave you alone.
There's a crazy. Yep, we know about him. He's a crazy. We just write him off, and that way they don't, you know, go nuts searching your stuff from time to time. Although apparently, where did I hear this? Probably No Agenda, I think. They were talking about Hemingway was real paranoid near the end, thought the government was after him. And, you know, after the latest, declassifying of a bunch of documents, turns out the government really was tracking him and following him around and all this other stuff. So.
Who could have guessed? Oh, right, Hemingway.
Yeah, well, you know.
You're only paranoid if people really aren't following you around.
Well, you know, there's a good argument to be made that on the internet, everyone really is out to get you, or at least most of the computers out there really are. I mean, yeah. It's hard to know. There's more that are trying to get you than aren't. So I think it's a fair assumption just to assume they are. So you're not being paranoid on the internet. You're being careful. There's a major difference.
Yeah.
So anyways, though. Yeah, go ahead. Excuse me.
Back to the topic about them checking your phones, like I was talking to Mups earlier. Yeah, one of my friends actually got their phone searched, which they just asked, and they didn't have any right to it, so he just gave it over, not knowing his rights. And
yeah, so he, you know, police officer said, "Hey, let me see your phone," so he just handed it to him, not knowing that he could have said no.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you do want to cooperate with police, but you have to know when to not.
Well, actually, they do have... That's not a good idea.
They do have the monopoly on violence, then, don't they? Because if you kill a police officer, you're probably going to jail for the rest of your life, which may not actually be that long. Whereas if a police officer accidentally kills you raiding your house, they'll go back for remedial training and I doubt, but they probably won't go to jail over it.
I would say cop friends arguing against the extended sentence for cop killers.
Not only that, but you know you've got to bear in mind too that they've got the monopoly, but I mean, you know, how much paperwork do they have to fill out if they do accidentally kill somebody? So I mean, that's a good deterrent right there, right?
The important thing,
have to fill out the paperwork.
Dang it! My attitude is don't talk to them. Just don't say anything to them. You know, essentially, because every time you talk to them, they are essentially a witness, so they'll be able to say, well, the such and such subject said this, such and such subject said this. So you don't give them anything to use.
Well, not only that, but
rule of thumb in the law textbooks that says police officers wear two witnesses.
Yeah, that's the thing. A police officer may not have perfect memory, but they're going to get up on that stand and say what they think. And if they misremember something, but you talk to them and everybody says, oh yeah, he talked to them. And, you know, he says, well, I remember him saying this. And you're like, that's not what I said to him. Everyone in that jury box is going to believe the police officer, not you. So,
they do have to write it down as you're saying it.
Well, I mean, can you read your own handwriting?
Hell no.
That's my point.
That's how people do that.
But, I've asked this question before on the show. Why is it assumed I have less rights to my stuff just because I store it in a computer, not in a locked box or a briefcase or, you know, some other more conventional form of protecting my data?
They're afraid of it more because they don't understand it enough?
Well, it's that, you know, is it just that? Is it just ignorance on the side of the people in charge, as well as, you know, the side of the people who don't know any better? I mean, it's like your friend. He didn't know, you know, BSV, your friend said he didn't know he could say no. He didn't know he could say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you have my phone without a warrant, sir. You got to be careful, because if you get a cop who doesn't care, that might be a good way to get nightsticked or tased. But if you get one that's following the rules and they're actually looking for something, you know, that's the thing. You got to watch out. If you've got a cop who's following the rules, and as long as you stay within the rules, you know, you might make him mad, but, you know, that's probably the worst that's going to happen. Whereas, you know, of course, they're going to be checking for every little thing. Would you say, Knox?
Do they really have nightsticks anymore? Because I'm pretty sure that with all the abuse that was given with them without the police officers receiving the proper training for them, they actually stopped having those, stopped picking them out.
I haven't actually looked lately and or asked one if they still carry them. I know they used to have those little extatons, though. They weren't really nightsticks. They were those.
Oh, so just because they may not have tons of nightsticks, they still have tasers and mace.
They're called six D cell flashlights.
And flashlights. Don't forget the flashlights.
Yeah. Hey, I've got one of those. Those things are handy. I mean, you want to talk about something?
Go ahead.
You hold it up by the light so you can swing it if you have to, and the butt of those things freaking hurts.
Uh huh.
Pry bar in the back seats for. Oh wait, there's nothing there.
And you aim for the bridge of the nose. I was gonna say you use that and aim for the bridge of the. You rest it on your shoulder, so you're just pointing the light at them when you're the cop, and then you aim for the bridge of the nose if you have to crack a guy, because it doesn't matter how drunk they are, they're going to be blinded for several seconds.
Well, that's getting into.
Get the additional rubber grip because it helps stick it to the place where it hits, so it doesn't bounce off or slide along.
Galaxy 15 radios, pure. Where to learn how to weaponize your flashlight. Sorry, go ahead, Knox.
The rubber grip, that doesn't soften it at all. That actually helps it hit better.
But, so anyways, though, I mean, we've kind of beaten that one down to death, but, you know, too, for the people who do know what's going on, your cell phone, your tablet, your iPad, your laptop, those are probably pretty tempting targets because, you know, think about what all you found on those things. In a briefcase, you probably have, you know, that day's work, and maybe you might have like a local bill or recent stuff, but you're not going to have all this stuff. Whereas a laptop, it doesn't carry, it doesn't weigh anymore just because you got it full. The thing doesn't get 2 pounds heavier when the hard drive is full. So you're likely to leave all kinds of stuff on there. You know, your taxes, your bills.
Growing up with my dad, a targeted truck driver, I early on not let police search without a warrant because they'll ask for your logbooks and you have to update it before they give them to the police officers and they'll pretty much accuse you of doctoring them right there and then and take them.
Huh. Yeah, that's, and that's the great thing, if you know what's up. But, you know, too, if the cop is really just doing their job, and I really like to think that most of them do, if you say, hey, I need a warrant, and they're just out doing their job, then, you know, they're not going to be very happy with you since you're not letting them, just willy-nilly do what they want. But they're not going to, they're not going to beat you up or anything like that. They're just going to be like, they might get angry with you, try to convince you anyways. But if they don't really have anything, they're not going to bother a judge trying to get a warrant on nothing. The ones that are doing their jobs, you got to think these guys are probably right. They deal with the ass crack of humanity on day in, day out. I mean, it's pretty easy to see how they get to the point of just assuming everyone is shit. So,
There are some that are like that. There are also... And the problem is, because I have a buddy of mine who's actually, his whole family are police, and the trick is they get sucked into the police environment, and that's their entire life. And yeah. So they either start the revolver, or they become giant assholes. And the trick to that is, that it, for all the police officers that listen to us, if they ever do, get other activities. Make sure that you become part of the community. Do other things. Go camping, hiking, board gaming, with your friends. Make sure you do other stuff.
If you are, I'll say right now, if you're a police officer and you're listening to us right now, get a hold of us. Go on Galaxy 15. There's a feedback form. I would love to have you on the show. Because I know we've said that a lot. Don't talk to cops. Don't do this. I'd love to have a real one on. I really would.
Yeah.
So I've got no problem if one, if one's listening and wants to come on the show, give me a call, man. We'll put you on. You can tell us what's for. It'd be awesome. Get involved with us. We're good people. anyways, though. But moving on from that aspect of it, which we got to clarify on this kind of stuff because we're not anti-cop, we're not anti-establishment, we're more pro protect yourself. That's all we're really ever saying. But so how do you protect yourself with your digital stuff? We talked about encryption last week, and we covered TrueCrypt in a fairly unconventional manner, but there's other ways to do it. One would save stuff on your laptop, phone, and tablet at all. If you're on a laptop, use the live CD, save anything important off the thumb drive or the cloud, which is horrible for security, but great when somebody seizes the local machine and there's nothing on it. So, let's see what else. I mean, I guess, is it crazy to think, don't store anything on your phone, don't store anything on your tablet? I mean, I know the devices are kind of designed to collect that stuff.
You really got to divide it up. You might want to automatic your contacts, and you might want to write your prostitutes down on a card on your wallet, and you might want to just memorize your drug dealer's number. Things like that.
Drug dealers change their numbers pretty often, don't they?
Yeah, burners. They're all into the burners, so they don't get tracked. Yeah. Which is smart. Get a new phone every week. I mean, they're making thousands of dollars, so it's just a business expense.
That's true.
They'll just rush right from doing, they do their taxes every year.
But I'm just thinking in general. If you use a smartphone, find a browser that doesn't really keep a history. Maybe don't have it save your passwords for your email. So if you do have to turn the phone on to somebody, they can't get you your email for it. Delete all your text messages? Don't keep your photos on there long term? I mean, is this stuff viable? Is that too much of a pain in the ass? Do you think?
No, I think it's good. Skyfire is the browser that I'd recommend. You can go in there and do the settings for that one, and it's available for all the platforms. So
I thought Skyfire pumped everything through a server to optimize it. That seems like more of a security risk, not less.
Right, but you know, it's going to be subpoenaable, I guess, if they wanted to do it that way. But it does optimize it. But the actual interface itself is you're able to not save anything, which is important.
Yeah.
The Firefox browser doesn't have a a porn mode yet. That's the problem.
I like on the iStuff. I like the Avanti browser. That has a privacy mode and it seems pretty good. Go ahead, Knox.
What you need to do with each piece of data is you need to put it in a category, like casual, where you just let your computer save the passwords and save whatever you want on stuff you don't want to lose, which you upload to the cloud and put on all your backups, and
encrypted.
Stuff you don't want to be found, so which you generally do your most protective things of. And
yeah.
You gotta pay attention for each and everything that you do, which category you want it to go on. Get in the habit.
Yeah. Well, what about the concept of, you know, when you travel, there's the concept of the dummy wallet. You know, you get another wallet, you put an old ID in it, and like, you know, $50 cash or something like that. Or the mugger's wallet. The idea is if you get mugged, you have something you can give them with them, you know, all your real stuff.
Right, right.
So
that's why people carry around wallets and money clips, and you also get that traveler's belt thing, which leads to muggers stealing your belt when you go as a tourist.
Yeah,
that's why you keep your money rolled up in your sock.
Oh, great! So they're just gonna cut your feet off.
Stores won't take that.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you bring us some money that doesn't smell? But
I was going to get back to your point earlier about you know, how to do the, you know, mugger's wallet or the second, you know, secondary or the backup thing. You could do it within a single device if you were careful with it, because you do the apps for everything, right? Your Facebook app, you do your Twitter app, and it goes to your dummy accounts. It goes to your boring accounts, and then
I wasn't thinking about keeping two smartphones. Those damn things are expensive. I like, you know, have a burner phone that, you know, you don't give to them and let them search or let them copy if you're in Michigan. And then you've got your real phone, which you, you know, dump between the seats when the cops pull you over and just hope it doesn't ring.
There's that problem. I'm just thinking about if you're out in public, they'll pat you down. I mean, that's just one of the things that gets done.
And then so you get to say sexual harassment, right? That's what you do with the TSA.
I'd rather have them grab the phone and page through it real quick and not get anything. You know,
no, that's true. Not give them your lock code.
Yeah, there is that. That's true. You can refuse the password. But if you're not going to refuse the password, if you're going to believe me, I'll work with you, I'll get along with you, there's got to be a procedure or some setup that you can do on your phones so that they appear clean, so that all you're doing is logging into a web browser and accessing your crucial stuff via the web. And then if they get a hold of it, you know, anything they suck off the actual local device is going to be clean.
Yeah, there's that. And you know, if you've got email accounts and really subversive stuff into, I just wouldn't link those up to your phone. Just a thought. You know, I wouldn't link them anywhere, to be honest. I'd only hit those over like a Tor connection from a computer you don't own from a Wi-Fi connection that's not affiliated to you. Just a thought, throwing that out there. But, you know, since we are talking about, you know, your constitutional right to search and seizure, what about, you know, and you know, disputing that whatever they found, they didn't have the right to go searching for it. What about the concept of hiding cameras in your house and in your car so that when they are acting wrongly, that you can see it?
There is that. I know that most police cars have cameras in them now.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
So if a police officer actually takes you into the front of their car when they're doing the pat down and they're doing a search, it's because they want you on camera.
They want you on camera. They actually got later. A lot of them actually have them in the back as well. You know, when I've told you before, I was on jury duty not too long ago, and one of the big pieces of evidence was video from the back of the cop car where they sat there and talked to the guy for a couple hours, and he talked to the cops, and he basically implicated himself. If he hadn't said a word, if he had just shut up and sat in the car, I don't think he would have gotten convicted on nearly many things.
Yeah, so, there is that.
But I'm thinking in reverse. So it's like you're not doing anything wrong, but they decide they're going to search your car anyways, even if you said, I don't consent to a search without a warrant. If they do it anyways, and you film, even if they tried to plant something, because I know there are dirty cops that will do that, and I pointed it out, but it is true. I had a buddy of mine.
Stories of whatever they take for evidence just gets auctioned off, and you never see it again.
Yeah, whether or not you actually got convicted, right? So
whether or not you even went to trial.
Yeah, that's true. Anything related to a drug charge, even if it was a plant or not real, or, you know, went to trial, it was all dismissed. Yeah, anything they take with relation to a drug charge, you're never seeing again.
Houses, children, whatever.
Department of Child Services taking screaming parents away from their, or screaming parents, taking screaming children away from their terrified parents since the 70s, I think. So.
Yeah, and they don't, and there's not much legal recourse to go after them.
I've had a lawyer tell me this. The requirement of evidence needed to take a child away from their parent is less than the evidence needed to send to some. It takes more evidence to send to jail. It's, you know, with to take their kids away, it's reasonable suspicion. To send somebody to jail is beyond a reasonable doubt. So,
lost her twins, her baby twins, to a drug plant. So.
Oh, really? Was it the police that planted it? Since, I mean, we kept saying that.
One went in and asked to use the bathroom, did some syringe spray while he was in there.
Wow.
Then they busted the door 5 minutes later.
I'm glad I don't live where you live.
I don't live there either.
It's crazy, man. So, yeah, just... You know, I mean, you don't have to be an ass to the cops. Just, you know, and don't get in their way, obviously. Just if they're, you know, don't make their job easier for them, especially if they've got no reason to bug you. So, you know, back to that again. I think we've come back to that like every other show. So, and I hate to do it because I know a lot of police officers and they're good guys. They really are. It's just, you know, the system is so.
One bad one to mess you up.
That's true. And, you know, of course, once you're messed up for life, if you spend, look at it this way. Let's say you do get a dirty cop who plants something on you and you have to spend 6 months of your life, you know, in and out of jail because, you know, you're held in custody the whole time unless you've got bail. And you know, how many people have a couple $1,000 for bail laying around? And
they're supposed to be able to, they're legally supposed to put it inside the budget.
Well, they have an interesting definition of what your budget is, too. So, you know, but, you know, how, you know, if you've got to take 6 months out of your life and deal with this, how many places are going to have your job waiting for you when you come back? Let's be honest, especially in this economy. You know, I mean, that's your reputation is ruined whether you were convicted or not. So, you know, that makes it really hard to get jobs in the future. You probably lose your current job. Of course, you lose the income from that because you're dealing with that, and lawyers are expensive. So, you know, it
your budget for the bail is another mortgage on your house, basically.
Yeah. And that's crazy. I mean, you are supposed to get that money back, but still. I mean, that's a... I don't really know where I'm going with this. I'm just, you know, be careful, especially if you're doing anything that somebody might get twitchy about. Like, I do network security. I'm really careful about what I leave the house with on my laptops and how easy it is to get to some of it because, you know, I wrap up a lot of my work in virtual machines because most people don't boot the virtual machines when they're looking at your laptop. And when they see, you know, if somebody knows what a backtrack disk is and they see that wallpaper, they tend to get very excited. And... You know, it's easier to just not deal. You know what I mean? Just, like, keep it, you know, don't make yourself a target, I think is what we're saying, ultimately. Just don't make yourself a target.
Yep. don't yell at, don't speak out or just exactly blend in with the regular populace. You know, if things start to go down, it'd become a wallflower. Just kind of back up and ease away from the situation. If you're speeding, say, yep, I'm sorry, I was speeding, officer. Just be a little bit meek and they'll...
No. That's what they want. They ask you if you are speeding, you say... No, officer.
Yeah,
because
if they say, do you know what I pulled you over for? And you say, I might have been speeding, you just confessed.
Well, that's true.
You tell them that, at the most,
well,
you can
better
probably
to say...
tell them that you can't really judge your speed because it doesn't work with the size tires you have. But that's...
If somebody asks you, you know, do you know why I pulled you over? You say, I don't know. Because, you know, and then they tell you, you were speeding. Oh, well, shit, sorry. You know, that's, yeah, don't admit to anything, but definitely don't. I'm just saying, if you have a girlfriend who's sitting in the passenger seat and a cop pulls over and she goes, you motherfucker, you son of a bitch, you're likely to end up getting a ticket, and you'll be lucky if you don't skip. Cuffed and put in the car.
Well, that's the thing too. If you give them the reason to look, they're going to be going over every square inch of your car looking for anything. It's like, oh, your insurance expired. Is oh, this, that, and the other. So you know,
I'm sure
just
if Patrick here, he would be suggesting that you flirt with him, especially if they're a guy laid on heavy, make them really uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, TAC is in the police state of the future over there. So you know, I'm sure he's got some great guides about not making a target. So we might want to talk to him about that later. But anyways, I think we're just about out of our time slot here, and we're going to have to get strict about that again since Newsreel is starting up, and, you know, Hugo's doing it, and he specifically wanted to make sure that we were going to carry it on G15, so I'm going to get really strict about being on time from now on so that we don't, you know, we got kind of lax there last shows, and we've had technical issues, so it's not been entirely unwarranted, but we've got to be stricter about this. So I'm going to close this out now. Same album, same group. Just in case you've forgotten, the group was A Final Date, and the album is Astronauts. This is Nurcore Rocket Design Limited. I think I may have played this track before, but it's a good track, so we're going to close out on that. We'll be back Thursday.
Day after tomorrow. Same cyber
day after
time,
tomorrow.
Same cyber channel.
Nice. Actually, Knox, you deserve a...
Toasty!
And with that, I will mute the call, mute myself, and play the music. ¶¶